Welcome back, crime fanatics. This is True Crime Project, and I'm Kat.
And I'm Steph.
And you are getting a mini-sode. We are kind of off our normal schedule, but we are trying through this craziness to get episodes out as quickly as we can. I think it's like Thursday, March 93rd or something like that.
Yeah.
It's, in real,
I saw a meme yesterday that said tomorrow's not April 1st, it's March 32nd.
Seriously though, but then it's like when we got to, so today's actually April Fool's, I think. I don't know.
Yeah,
but I feel like when we got to the end of March, I was like, wait, it's still March. Uh-huh. And then are you, so Steph, is your state on lockdown through, do you have a date?
We are through April 30th now.
Okay, so are we. And I was sitting there thinking about it yesterday. I'm like, that's a whole nother month, you guys.
Yeah.
And it's minimum. So it could be even longer. And I'm like,
I know for a fact that I won't go back to work until the kids go back to school. And our kids here are out till May 1st. So.
Or ours. My. I know my jobs won't be open until after that anyways, but I don't know. This homeschooling stuff, I used to teach, and so like the lessons aren't the hard part, but everything's technology now. And when I was teaching, my kids I was teaching did not have Chromebooks. That wasn't really a thing. And so now trying to even really, our school district at least, they have a great system and every kid has a Chromebook, so that's great. But they have, for safety reasons, they had like all of the cameras and stuff disabled on the computers. Well, now they need them, so they're trying to remotely like create, like change everything. And I feel so bad for everybody, like all the teachers and stuff that are trying to on the fly now learn how, especially when you have teachers that have been doing the same thing for 20 years, and now they're having to try and figure out how to teach my kid from their home. It's like, so yeah, it's been, today was their first day of, they've had e-learning before for like snow days and stuff, but this is like where the teacher's supposed to be interactive and things like that, and it's just not working. So we'll see. We're doing okay. We're doing the best we can.
Yeah, I'm not meant for homeschooling.
I saw a meme today. I think my husband sent it to me that was like, today we're learning fractions, and it had glasses of wine that were filled like a quarter, a half, three fourths, and full. Like, yeah, that's about the math that we're going to be doing the way we're going here. Cause
that's funny.
But I don't know. Look, I'm very grateful that my kids are pretty on task and like with it, because if I had kids that I had to fight to do this, I can't even imagine. So cheers to all you parents out there that are fighting to learn how to homeschool your kids right now.
So we got 3 weeks worth of homework for the older two, and they did the most of it at their dad's house before I got them. And then I had them, the 19th was my last day of work, and I got them after we were done cleaning the shop, and I had them until Sunday. And I'm telling you what, when I told Ethan it was time to sit down and do his writing, he cried.
Oh no.
He threw himself down. Like, it was intense. And I texted Amanda a picture of him, and I was like, dude, I can't do this. I was like, what the fuck is going on?
I have a feeling there's a lot of parents in the same boat there, and yeah. I feel pretty bad for everybody that's having to deal with that. But you know, I mean, honestly, at the end of the day, at least we're all safe at home, I guess, right, is the upside there. Because, well, I still have, unfortunately, my husband's job is, well, fortunately, my husband's job is considered essential, so he's still working and he's in the public every day still.
Yeah,
but hopefully, I don't know, we'll see. We found out today that there's two cases in my town, which my town is very small, so it's getting closer and closer. And you know, I mean, I'm in Illinois, we've had over 100 deaths now and a lot of cases, and for the most part I felt fairly okay with it because I knew, not okay with it, but like safe as far as it was concerned, because it was mostly in Chicago and we're not in Chicago. But now it's everywhere. So they pretty much say, just assume it's wherever you are and be careful, because it is. And if it isn't, it will be. So
yeah, we have 5 cases in my county now. But you know what's fun is I saw this meme. I sent it to our group this morning, but I don't know if you like read it or not. But everybody's calling Ohio the hold my beer state of COVID-19.
Oh no.
Did you read it? No, I didn't,
but I saw like Iowa and like Florida. I was like, guys, just stay home. Knock it off.
So it was a Reddit post that I saw. It says, Patel and OSU developed new COVID-19 coronavirus test. And the first comment, it says, Ohio is the hold my beer state right now. Major international event, shut it down. You need a sanitized mask? We got it. You want a better COVID test? On it. And then the second comment, yeah, what the fuck, America? Ohio's got this.
Well, that's good. So you're not, I was thinking the opposite way. No. Like, that's a good thing.
Yeah, because Governor DeWine has been like really on top of the situation and like shutting stuff down, and like before it got too out of hand.
Yeah, and our poor mayor. Oh my god. Well, and I will say she has a good sense of humor and she's embracing it on Twitter. I was dying.
Looks like that. She needs to have a good sense of humor. I don't know what the fuck you all did to her.
Yeah, she looks pretty rough these days compared to how she used to look.
I feel bad, but I swear to God, I thought it was a girl or a woman or God dang it, a man.
She's awesome though. Like Ricardo sent me a picture of, so in, but down by the Bean in Millennial Park.
Yeah.
There is like a, changing sign that's like a TV screen basically, and yeah. Right now somebody put her face on it like and it said like I'm watching you. She retweeted it and she was like, they're not wrong though. So I'm like, she has a good sense of humor about it, but that poor woman just can't, nobody's giving that lady a break. So but yeah, anyway.
mean...
yeah. So at least, and I'll say if nothing else, at least there's plenty of memes and laughter in this time, if nothing else. So I think that's pretty much what's getting me through at this point. So
yeah, I saw a meme the other day that said, because I'm posting jokes about the coronavirus, don't think I'm not taking it seriously. Making fun of my life as how I've gotten this far. I was like, true. If that's not the truth,
seriously though, yeah, it is 100% accurate. So okay, so for our mini-sode today, we each chose a story of a cold case that got solved years later, right? That was the theme stuff.
Yes, sorry.
Okay. Yeah. I was like, right?
I didn't know that was a question.
Oh, okay. So I will go ahead and we each chose one. So I will go ahead and do mine first, right? And then Steph will tell you her story. So the story that I chose for today is the murder of Steve Merritt. And this story took place in 1989 in Mission Viejo, California, which is basically why I chose this cold case, because I actually lived in Mission Viejo as a kid. And really right before the story took place is when we moved out of there. So yeah. And I was like, well, as soon as I saw this case, I was like, ooh, Mission Viejo. And then they're like, oh, 1989, I was like, damn, that's right after we moved out of that town. So I was that's like, funny. I'm in. I want to know what happened. So Stephen Merritt was a typical 21-year-old college student. He enjoyed working on cars and partying with his friends. And on the night of February 25th, 1989, Stephen and some friends are partying, playing pool, and drinking a keg. Well, one of the friends suggests a party he knows of close by. So the group grabs their keg and heads to the party. Most of the group of friends packs up the keg and calls it a night, and they leave the party after being there for a while around 2:30 in the morning. And I don't know if this is a normal thing, but I found the traveling keg pretty funny. Like, kegs are heavy as shit. But at the same time, I know young guys aren't leaving their beer somewhere. So, and plus the keg has like a $50 or $60 deposit that you get back when you return it. So I get it. But I just find the image of them like traveling the town carrying a keg funny.
That is pretty funny.
Fortunately, that's the only bright spot in the story for a while.
Oh, geez.
One of the group of friends, Steve, had stayed at the party. Did you just hear that?
Yeah.
That was my dog. Oh my God. I swear sometimes she's a cat. She sounds like she's coughing up a hairball over there, but she's just, it's allergy season, guys. Okay. So, okay, so Steve had stayed behind at the party when the rest of the group dispersed, but Steve finally did leave the party about an hour later, and around 3:36 a.m., there were reports of shots fired in a neighborhood in Mission Viejo, and a woman then found a body laying in the street. When the police arrived on the scene, the person had a bloody nose and had been shot in the back, and he was dead on arrival. It seemed as though he'd been in an altercation shortly before being shot based on his bloody nose, but the body had, yeah.
You need to back up because you cut out.
Starting where?
Did
I just go all the way back from when the dog made a?
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Just do that.
Oops. Now I lost. Okay. I'm trying to find my spot now. Steve stayed behind at the party when the rest of the group dispersed, and he finally left the party about an hour later, and there were reports of shots fired in the neighborhood in Mission Viejo around 3:36 a.m. And then a woman found a body laying in the street. When the police arrived on the scene, the person had a bloody nose and had been shot. He was dead on arrival, and it seemed as though he'd been in an altercation shortly before being shot because he had a bloody nose, which is strange. But the body had no identification in his wallet, so he was processed as a John Doe. They did an autopsy and all that under John Doe. Now, the next day, Stephen's family got together to celebrate his mother Anna's birthday at a restaurant, but Steve never showed up. And when I was researching this one, it kind of brought me back to the story I told about John Wayne Gacy and his last victim, who the reason that his family, like, it was the same story where the kid missed his mom's birthday. And I'm like, y'all, don't go around murdering people at all, but if you do, make sure it's not their mom's birthday. Like, that's like, it's like double, you know? Like, it's just doubly, yeah. Like, ow. Ugh. I don't know. So he didn't show up for his mom Anna's birthday dinner. And this worried Anna because she said he wasn't the type to just not show up to her birthday celebration or family party. And after being unable to reach Steve, she started calling around to his friends, and Anna found out that Steve hadn't been seen since attending a party the night before. So Anna then filed a missing persons report, and she started calling around to hospitals and the morgue, and she finally gets in contact with somebody that says they have a John Doe that fits the description. And it turns out to be Stephen Merritt. Mm. So the police start interviewing the group of friends that went to the party. and they find out that Steve had phoned his roommate, Alan, who had not attended the party, at around 3 a.m. for a ride home. None of the group had even realized when they left that he'd stayed behind at the party. They were probably all drunk and packed up all their stuff and just as a group left and thought they were all together. But unfortunately, Steven had stayed behind by himself at this party. So after a while of waiting, Alan goes to pick up Steven at an intersection that they'd agreed upon. And he shows up and Steve just never comes. So after a while waiting, he goes home. Now, the police start looking at Alan and find out he hadn't attended the party, but that his younger brother had. So they're able to confirm that Alan left to pick up Steven when he left to pick up Steven and when he returned home. And Alan's brother, Dean, when he was interviewed, gave some interesting insight. He said that Steven had been dancing with a girl all night, and that he believed that the girl that he was dancing with was the girlfriend of the guy throwing the party, Mark Morales. So it's Mark Morales' house where this party is at.
Okay.
And so now the police pull in Mark Morales for an interview, and he says there were a lot of people at the party. He doesn't know who his girlfriend might have been talking to or dancing with at the party. Okay, sure.
Lies.
When other people from the party were interviewed, they were either unable or unwilling to give any helpful information. What's that?
Is that noise, Lucy? I don't hear it now.
Oh, it might have been.
Okay. It sounded like her scratching or something.
Oh. I might have even not been paying attention because I tune her out at this point. Sorry.
I'm sorry.
Sorry. When you messaged me, I couldn't see it because I'm reading my notes.
Sorry.
So I don't see. No, that's okay. So I don't see. What was that noise that you did?
What noise?
It was like the joining noise, like when you click on so that I can hear you.
Oh.
You muted it?
That?
I don't know. Okay. Anyways. Someone called into the tip line to the police. Something that Bay had seen. A man said that he was on his way home from the grocery store around 3:30 a.m. and came across someone walking down the street that matched the description of Stephen Merritt, and that there was a car stalking him, like behind him. And sidebar real quick, I just have to say, I love that this guy is so antisocial like me that he likes to go grocery shopping in the middle of the night so that he doesn't have to people.
I do the same damn thing.
It's pretty sad that the grocery stores are closed so early right now because I love going when no one is there. And now it's just like you have to go by 8:30 or they're closed.
Yeah.
And it makes me, I'm like, there's so many people here. I don't like that normally. And B, now I think y'all have COVID. So I don't want to be, I want no part of it. I like have been going like still at the end of the night, like 7:30. I've found that it's slightly better. Like people have gone home for the night.
Right. But
anyways. So the guy that called in the tip said that he was able to read three of the license plate numbers NCK. So he's clearly a crime fanatic and thought that the car, he said he thought the car might be a Chevy Chevelle. Okay. So police run the partial plate to see if anyone from the party they interviewed owned a vehicle that would match this, and they find Mark Morales owns a Chevelle and that he had reported it stolen the day after this happened.
Oh, so that's convenient.
It is. It's super. I mean, that doesn't necessarily always, we know that things can change. It might not mean anything, but it's
right.
Fishy as fuck. So Mark claims he was at the movies, and when he came out, the car was gone.
Oh,
Okay, sure. Now, I'm no detective, but I think Mark has surpassed like the coincident limit for this crime. And a month later, the LAPD finds his car torched. The crab lab, the crime lab, oh man, finds it was likely burned to cover up a crime.
Yeah.
And there's nothing connecting Mark Morales directly to Steven's murder, and no eyewitness or DNA. So it's just a lot of fishy shit.
Yeah.
Since they don't have enough to charge anyone, the case goes cold. And the case sits for 11 years with no one being charged in Steven's murder. New detectives finally are handed the case, so they start to go over everything again. And they bring in people that had been interviewed in 1989 again, and a couple that had been very tight-lipped 11 years ago are now more willing to talk. This couple named Mabel and Alex say they were afraid of Mark back then, but now since they don't really have any contact with him, they were more willing to be upfront. So they say that at the party, Mark had been watching Steven dance and flirt with his ex-girlfriend, all night until he reached his boiling point. He finally confronted Mark, and the two had an altercation, which would make sense as to why Steven had a bloody nose. And the couple says that right after Steven left the party, that wasn't the end of it. Mark had left the party in a fit of rage behind him, but Steven didn't know that Mark had left the party. So looking back at the files from 89, the new detectives noted that originally Mark's mother had mentioned two friends of Mark's who she said were bad influences on him. And those two friends had never been followed up on. So the police look into the two friends by last names of Torres and Espinoza. Now, Torres broke and said that Mark had snapped and shot Steven, and that Espinoza hadn't had any part in the murder, but that he helped him dispose of everything. Which makes sense, too, because the car that was torched was actually found near his home. So when the police bring Espinoza in for questioning, he lawyers up immediately. He is not going to comply at all. So the police wired... Yeah, no. Well, he knows he's in trouble. And he's probably hoping that they don't have anything legit because it's been so long. So the police wiretap Mark and his mother's phones, but they must have suspected this for some reason, because when Mark calls his mother, he says, "It's Uncle Lenny. How bad is it?" To which his mother responds, "It's real bad." And then they discuss a lawyer.
Oh.
Which is just super...
It's weird.
Yeah. So the police take this as some sort of code that his mom was letting him know he needed to, like, get the hell out of Dodge. And I mean, how can anyone live looking over their shoulder like that for 11 years? To the point that your mother and you talk on the telephone in code. Which means she also clearly knew what happened.
Look at the Golden State Killer, though.
But nobody knew about his murders. He was on his own. His mom wasn't like, "Hey, they're on to you. Get out of there." You know what I mean? Like, no.
What?
I mean, like, with the Golden State Killer, his mom wasn't involved in it and, like, calling him and being like, "Hey, they're on to you. Like, get out of there." You know what I mean? Like, nobody's... Golden State Killer was on his own. Meanwhile, this guy's mom is like... I don't know. It's crazy to me. I don't know what I would do if one of my kids was in some kind of trouble like that, but that's just a little insane to me. So, at this point, Mark Morales is married. He's a high school teacher, which I think is kind of creepy. Can you imagine finding out your high school teacher used to be a cholo that murdered someone? You still there?
Yeah, you cut out. Oh.
Cool. This is going great.
It wasn't very long though. Can you not hear me?
Now? What the hell just happened?
Dude, I don't know.
Weird. So I don't know where to start now.
What was the last thing you read?
Oh, fuck.
What?
Governor Pritzker signs order requiring all Illinois students to repeat their current grade again in 2020-21.
No. It's an April Fool's joke because they have it for Ohio, too. No, it's an April Fool's joke.
Okay. I don't know where to begin because I don't know what is recorded. And when I said to you, can you imagine finding out your high school teacher used to be a cholo that murdered someone? You didn't respond, or at least I couldn't hear you. That. Oh, so what was the last thing you heard?
I want to say that I heard the first word of that sentence. So if you just want to start there.
I'm gonna start over. That whole like paragraph, just so that it's a more seamless transition, hopefully.
Okay.
After we were done talking about like him and his mom.
Okay.
So, at this point, Mark Morales is married. He has kids, He has a kid or two. And he's a high school teacher. Can you imagine finding out your high school teacher used to be a cholo that murdered someone? Good Lord.
Mm-hmm. No.
No, not at all. So the police finally charge Mark Morales and arrest him in July of 2003. And a jury finds him guilty and sentenced him to 17 years in prison, which means that he should really already be out of jail. And honestly, that just doesn't seem long enough. But that's our justice system. So, and I could not find anywhere online about him being released. But I would imagine it's been 17 years. So even if he served the full amount of time, I would assume that he's out by now, right?
I mean, I would assume so.
Anyways, that is the story of the murder of Stephen Merritt.
I don't really have any words for that.
You say that a lot.
I know. I'm left speechless a lot. Okay, so since I don't have anything to say about yours, we'll just get straight into mine. Ironically enough, my case takes place in California as well. So you can help me with the name of this town. Is it Van Nuys? It's V-A-N-N-U-Y-S.
V-A-N-N-U-Y-S?
Yeah.
I don't know that town, honestly.
Oh.
I don't know. Could be.
Okay. Well,
wonder... Okay.
So, on February 24th, 1986, the body of Sherry Rasmussen was found dead in the apartment she shared with her husband, John Rutten. That's what we're going to go with. She had been beaten and shot three times in a struggle. The LAPD initially thought it was a botched burglary, and they were unable to identify a suspect. So, like, this case is, like, a lot of twists and turns. On the morning that her body was found dead, her husband left their condominium and went to work. Rasmussen was scheduled to give a motivational speech at work that day. A manager tactic she did not feel was effective or doing any bit of good in her workplace. So in order to avoid it, she told her husband she was going to call in sick using a back injury she incurred while doing aerobics the day before as an excuse. Because that sounds like a totally me thing to do. At 9:45 that morning, a neighbor, a neighbor noticed that the whatever the fuck their last name is, garage door.
Honey, just say it with confidence, and whatever you say, that's it. That's the correct way.
The word. And if I keep trying to stutter it, I'm gonna make myself sound stupid, and I already sound stupid enough.
Okay, say it with conviction. Doesn't even matter. Call them Smith. Their last name is now Smith. No, I'm just kidding. But
the Rootins. There we go.
Okay, there you go.
And there was no car visible. Approximately 15 minutes later, Rootin made the first of several unanswered calls home over the course of the day. Rasmussen's sister also called without answer. At noon, two men who the neighbors believe were gardeners in the compound, and compound is a very odd word. I feel like compound reminds me of like cultish shit, but we'll just come back to that. The gardeners gave the neighbors a purse they found that turned out to be Rasmussen's. A maid cleaning a nearby unit said she heard something that sounded like two people fighting and then something falling at around 12:30. When Rootin returned home in the evening, he found his garage door open and broken glass on the driveway. In addition, he discovered that the BMW he bought for his wife as an engagement gift was missing. Because of Rasmussen's morning plans, he found it strange that she would have later gone out without letting him know. The house's answering machine had not been activated, despite both of them usually activating it before leaving the house. Inside, this poor man found his wife dead on the living room floor, shot three times. There were signs of a struggle, such as a porcelain vase that had apparently been broken over his wife's head prior to the shooting, a bloody handprint next to the burglar alarm's panic button, and a toppled credenza. It appeared that
credenza. Did you ever watch the stupid ass show called with Paul Rudd? It's called Living with Myself.
No.
Oh, you have to watch it. I'm sorry, but every time I hear credenza now, that it reminds me of that show, and that's what you're watching today. So go on.
Okay. Wounds and a bruise on her face that appeared to have been inflicted by the muzzle of a gun. The gun had been fired through a quilt, apparently to muffle the sound. The investigating criminalist also observed a bite mark on her arm and took a swab from it. So, hold on. Let me find my spot. Yeah. So what's the show about you want me to watch?
Living with Yourself. It's Paul Rudd, and that's pretty much the only actor I actually know their name in it, but it's super fucking weird show. It's only like 7 or 8 episodes.
Oh, okay.
And it's on Netflix, and you need to watch it.
Okay. So the case went cold, and I'm going to skip the initial investigation because then it wouldn't be a mini episode. But the second investigation, crime in LA had declined enough from its earlier levels that detectives began looking into cold cases to increase their clearance rates. Jim Nuttall and Pete Barba reviewed the Rasmussen file and found it interesting enough to be worth pursuing. Because the DNA test pointed to a female suspect, they decided the burglary theory was invalid and they would have to start from the beginning. Nuttall and Barba looked at the case as a murder, with the burglary staged to throw the police off the trail. Many aspects of the crime were improbable for a break-in, especially one committed in daylight. Rasmussen's jewelry box, an inviting target for a burglar, was in plain sight atop her dresser and had not been touched. The condo was in the middle of a gated complex, surrounded by other units from which burglars could have expected to be easily observed. The front door had an alarm warning, and that had been forced open, as it might have been if the burglars had not expected anyone to be home. Inside, a key aspect of the crime scene was also inconsistent with the burglary theory. At the top of the stairs was a stack of stereo equipment atop a VCR. If, as evidence suggested, the struggle between Rasmussen and her attacker had begun upstairs and then continued downstairs, that stack would have likely been knocked downstairs and scattered as well. It made more sense to us. Huh?
That makes sense.
It made more sense to assume that it had been stacked afterward when an actual burglar would have fled the scene immediately after the shooting. The forensics reinforced this theory. On a record player atop the stack was a thumb-shaped bloodstain. It had no print, suggesting whoever left it was wearing gloves to avoid leaving identification. But the blood was Rasmussen's, suggesting the equipment had been stacked after the struggle. It had been left behind, the detectives realized, to make this crime look like something other than what it really was. From the four bound volumes of the case file, they developed a list of five female suspects. Nuttall was taken aback when Rutten told him over the phone that one of the suspects was a police officer. Yeah, and at that point, she had been promoted to a higher level of detective and was working art theft cases as part of the commercial crimes division. Isn't that just...
What?
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
So, hold on. I didn't put her first name down.
Now we know why this took so long to get solved, probably.
Yeah. Why did I not... I'm scrolling. Because I didn't write down her first name for some reason.
I have,
Mm-hmm.
Thing is, oh, never mind.
Oh, okay. Her name is Stephanie Lazarus.
I feel like you should have remembered her name, Steph.
Yeah, I know. The investigators soon eliminated all but one of the other women. The other, a former coworker of Rasmussen's who had had some disputes with her. But she was eliminated by a collected DNA sample. With only Lazarus left, they kept their investigation a closely guarded secret. Not only did her husband also work in commercial crimes division as a detective, she may have had other friends who could have tipped her off. If she were the killer, she could have improved her defense. If she were not, then they could have unintentionally smeared a fellow officer who had had an unblemished service record over the course of her career, with no disciplinary investigations or civilian complaints. They only referred to her as number five, worked on that case after hours or behind closed doors, and developed cover stories to explain why they wanted to look at personal records for one particular officer from 20 years ago. The detectives began looking into other aspects of Lazarus' life during the mid-1980s. Another detective recalled that at that time, most LAPD officers had preferred a .38 as their backup or off-duty carry gun. In fact, they were required to only purchase weapons compatible with the Federal Plus P ammunition that had been used in the murder. State and departmental records showed that Lazarus had indeed owned a Smith & Wesson Model 4938 at the time and reported it stolen to Santa Monica police.
Oh, this sounds familiar.
Yes, but she didn't report the stolen gun to her own department. She reported it to a different department, and that was 13 days after the murder. Since the location where Lazarus had reported it stolen was near a popular pier, they assumed she had thrown the gun in the Pacific Ocean. Without the weapon, DNA would be the only definite way to connect the crime to Lazarus. Nuttall and Barba theorized from their own experience about how an LAPD officer would commit a murder. It would be better to do it on a day off, and departmental records showed that Lazarus had indeed been off the day that Sherry Rasmussen was killed. An officer would know better than to use his or her duty gun, since it would have had to be disposed of after the crime, and the penalties for losing a duty gun or failing to prevent its theft were severe. So instead, you know, it made more sense to use a personal gun.
Yeah.
So the homicide detective supervisor at Van Nuys began letting his senior officers all the way up to Chief William Branton know of the case along with senior prosecutors from the L.A. County District Attorney's Office. It was transferred to the Robbery Homicide Division, which handled many of the department's high-profile cases, including the Art Theft of Bureau, where Lazarus herself worked. Her arrest was planned carefully. On the day of the arrest, dozens of officers arose before dawn. After being briefed on a search warrant, they were told would be executed outside the city, but with few details beyond that. They went to wait near Lazarus' home in Simi Valley and that city's Metrolink station, where Lazarus commuted to the city. A short time later, detectives from the RHD, who had been selected for their lack of personal connection to Lazarus, called her from the lockup at Parker Center, the department's headquarters. Breton had ordered that location be used since Lazarus would have to surrender her gun in order to enter it, limiting the possibility she might resist violently when she was arrested. The detectives Greg Cerns and Dan Jaramillo told her they had someone in custody who wanted to talk about an art theft. After Lazarus had checked her gun and come to the interrogation room, they explained that this was really about some loose ends they were trying to tie up in the Rasmussen case, since her name had come up in the investigation. They claimed they wanted a private sitting because while Rutten was an old boyfriend, Lazarus had long been married to someone else and they did not want her private life to become the subject of office gossip. Stearns and Jaramillo knew they would have to tread carefully since Lazarus herself was well aware of police interview techniques and her rights to silence and legal counsel, which she could invoke at any time. They rambled and digressed from the subject at times, sometimes discussing unrelated police business, but eventually came back to Rasmussen. Lazarus claimed to recall little due to the intervening years, but gradually revealed more and more knowledge, including oblique acknowledgments of her visits to the Rutten condo and a specific encounter at Rasmussen's office, until she accused her colleagues of considering her a suspect. The detectives mentioned it was possible they had DNA evidence from the crime scene and requested DNA samples from Lazarus. Lazarus declined and thereafter left the room. She was immediately arrested and charged with murder.
They actually have DNA from the crime scene, though?
From her bite.
Oh, that's right. That's right. You said they swabbed a bite on her. Yep. Okay.
And she... In March of, I think it's 2018, she was sentenced to, convicted of first degree murder, and she was sentenced to 27 years to life in prison.
Good.
She will be eligible for parole in 2034.
What was her motive?
Hold on. You know, I don't really think it says. Yeah, I don't think it says.
Weird. She was serious, like she had to have known her somehow.
Okay. They were calling it a love triangle.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Of course. But why?
The file was 2012, not 2018.
How do they know that it was just her involved in this and not...
I guess the evidence lacked proof of
just couldn't charge anybody else? Okay.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I mean, if it was... a love triangle with a scorned woman wanting to get the other woman out of the way.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah.
Interesting. I've actually never heard of this one, so that was a good one. Hello?
Hi, sorry.
I have a question.
I'm not used to recording in the middle of the day.
Right. How are you doing on toilet paper?
I still have 3 unopened packs.
Oh, good lord. You went all out.
Well, I bought 18 rolls on Amazon, remember?
Yeah.
And so they came in, like, packs of 6.
Oh, but you don't have, like, 3 giant packs. Okay, that makes sense.
It's, like, 3 packs of 6 that I got.
So, before all this happened, or before, like, everything closed down, I kind of had this, like... little inkling that maybe something serious was coming. So I just happened to buy, I went like did my regular grocery shopping and got toilet paper because we needed it. And I just happened to buy like, I was like, well, I'll just get a little bigger pack than I normally do just in case. We're still on our first giant pack of toilet paper. I would say we still have at least a week, if not two more weeks out of this one pack. So I do That's not funny. Understand what people are doing with all the shit they hoarded. Like, are they just not leaving their houses at all for groceries for like 3 months? Or, and I don't know how you could even do that. I guess you could freeze meat and stuff, so it's possible. But yeah, I think it's crazy that people hoarded so much.
Yeah. And that all of the hoarding is what made me have to buy toilet paper on Amazon.
Yeah, it was ridiculous.
And you were making fun of me because I was complaining about not being able to find toilet paper, but I literally legitimately needed toilet paper.
Well, it's so stupid because it was like people are going out and they're just buying all this insane stuff that it's like, do you need 5,000 rolls of toilet paper? Like,
you would have to shit like 400 times a day to use that.
I just don't understand. Like, are you planning to be in your house for a year? Or, and also, what kind of storage closets and pantries and shit do these people have that are hoarding all this shit?
I'm fucking to store the shit that I have, and I'm not even hoarding. Like, I did
exactly
get meat because when I come, like, when I actually find meat at the store, like, I buy a couple things of like a little bit more than what I need just in case because you can't fucking find it. Like, this story on Monday, all I wanted was soup beans. I think I told you this.
Yes.
All I fucking wanted was soup beans, okay? So I go to Kroger, go to get the beans, no beans. Call Mike. Chili okay? Yeah, chili's cool. So he walks me through, like, everything that we had at home and, like, telling me everything that I needed to get. So I go get everything, and then I go to the ground beef. No fucking ground beef. Dude, I could have had a mental breakdown right in the middle of fucking Kroger right there because I wanted some sort of fucking soup, and I wasn't able, you know, it didn't seem like I was going to be able to. So I called this butcher shop here in town, and they typically, I'm pretty sure that they do bulk things instead of like the small orders. And so I was able to get 3 pounds of ground beef. And then when I got there, they have you just like pull up to the front door and they bring it out to you.
Yeah.
And she was like, did you try to get meat somewhere else? And I was like, yeah, I went to Kroger because I wanted to make soup beans, but they didn't even have soup beans. And then I couldn't get ham. She brought me a ham hock out, like a 4 or 5 pound ham hock for free. And then brought me like real smoked bacon for free.
Oh, wow. That's nice. Good.
And yeah. So I was like, fuck yeah. So like mom, when she got her Salvation Army box yesterday, you know what she got? A pack of dry navy beans. So, guess what I'm making when I eat up all this damn chili.
Well, at least you were able to find me. I've been pretty fortunate, I think, in finding most of the stuff that I want. But I've been kind of like, I live in a neighborhood that's super tightly knit, I think. And we have a Facebook page. So like nothing happens around here that we don't know about because there's like a bunch of Karens that live around here and they're always posting about like, and it's funny because any post that comes up, somebody will always comment, how's the traffic? Like, what are the roads like? Even though it has nothing to do with it, just because it's ridiculous. And there's always somebody like, oh, how are the roads? Like, come on, guys. Is this really that important? So anyways, so for the grocery stores, people would be posting like, okay, this grocery store has this and this still. This grocery store has toilet paper. So then I'd be like, okay, whatever I need, I would check the Facebook page for the area right now and find out what has what I need. So I've been pretty fortunate finding what I need. I was kind of thrown off. I think there must be a lot of survivalists that are like stocking up on like the dry beans and things like that because
yes.
I make, so my mother-in-law is, my in-laws live in Colombia. They lived here for a very long time, but they retired back to Colombia, but they make these lentils. It's like a soup. Like lentil bean soup kind of. And my kids love them. And it's just something really easy that I can make for my kids. I'm like, oh, when I go to the store, of course they'll have lentils. So it's something easy I can make for the kids. They didn't have any fucking lentils in the goddamn store. It took me like 3 stores to finally find them, like over the course of a week, because, and the only reason I got them was because I went late at night and they had just restocked them. The girl's like, oh, I just restocked those, because she saw how excited I was when I found them. I'm like, first of all, survivalists, what are you trying to survive? Let's say this was the apocalypse. Who the fuck wants to survive the apocalypse? No, thank you. I don't want to be hunting for food and living in a tent. Fuck that. COVID-19, take me home. No way. Oh my God. I'm not living like that. So I don't know. I just don't understand people that are like, I'm going to stock up on dry food and we're going to survive this thing. Like, if it's that bad, I don't really want to. So you take it. Go ahead.
So I have my own Karen story. I went to the gas station the other day.
Yeah. And
so, like, I've been dying. Like, I can't, there's only one gas station here that carries the energy drinks that I like. And with everything going on, I feel like I've been drinking, like, a lot of energy drinks. So I go to the gas station to pick up energy drinks, and I got me, like, a chocolate bar or whatever. And I go to get in line, and this gas station has duct tape X's on the floor to show you what 6 feet apart is. So I stand on my X like a good person, you know, following the rules and whatnot, which is something I don't normally do. And this woman gets in line behind me, legitimately within a foot of me. So I turn around. I said, can you go stand on your X, please? And she's like, why are you so worried about this? And I was like, I'm going to tell you the same thing I fucking tell everybody. I'm not worried about me. I'm worried about my 77-year-old mom and my 1-year-old preemie. Those are going to be the 2 people I love that get it and die. I was like, I'm not fucking playing games with you, Karen. I said, get the fuck back. Stand your 6 feet behind me. Get away from me. I was like, or I'm going to get this Lysol and I'm going to spray you down. I said, get the fuck up, Karen.
I feel like I'm not even sure which of the people in that story is the Karen, though.
I mean, that's true. But
I don't disagree with you, though. But I'm just saying.
Yeah. I'm like, I turned around because I was just like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, why are you this close to me? Like, there's X's on your floor. Like, fucking listen to the directions. Like, I don't care if you're not worried about it, but I don't want to bring it home.
Are you so worried about that? I feel like I'm going to look at, I think, life and the world differently after this, just because I've always been kind of a little OCD and I've never liked handshaking. I don't like hugging. I'm not, like, I am with my family, but, like, for customers and like things like that, like, I've never been one that likes people to touch me. I'm not a touchy person. So even more so after this, I'm like, at least now I kind of have like a good reason to be like, yeah, I'd rather not shake your hand, or like, no, I'm good with, how about we just wave to each other? Like, there's no, I'll bow. You want me to curtsy? I'll curtsy for you.
Can we just record you curtsying to people at work? I need a video of this, please.
Yeah. If I ever go back to work.
Are you not doing carry out still?
So yeah, that is actually, I think, going to change as well. So we have one of my 2 jobs. So I lost both my jobs, and then one of them has been doing just like a to-go and deliveries. So we were offered like a shift or 2 a week doing that. But now with everything changing even more, and them talking about people wearing masks and things like that, I have a feeling they're probably going to change it to curbside. I'm not really sure how that's going to work, but yeah. So no, but I was more thinking like, I feel like my bar that I work at, when I temp bar, it's way more like, I know everybody for the most part. And there's like people that feel a little too comfortable where they want to like a hug or what, always trying to like shake your hand, kiss your hand. It's like, dude, no, stop it. I have one regular and specific that like always wants me to like shake his hand at the end or whatever, and like tries to kiss my hand, and I'm like, yeah. And then I go wash my hands as soon as he leaves. I'm like, why do people feel the need to touch other, like, just keep your fucking hands to yourself. I don't know, I'm gonna be a little more, I think, pulled back than I even was before once this is goes back to whatever the new normal will be here. So
I told Mike last night, I went to Walmart because I had to grab a few things for my mom. But when I came downstairs, it just so like happened to work out perfectly. I sat down, I looked at him, I said, I need to get the fuck out of this house. And he kind of just looked at me. He's like, what? And then my mom texted me that she needed stuff. I was like, oh, goody. I'm leaving. I was like, I cannot. I was like, he was grumpy yesterday and he swears up and down he wasn't grumpy, but he was grumpy and it was making me grumpy and the baby was grumpy.
I feel like that's just the mood in the country right now, though. Like, so anyway, guys, we hope that you are all staying safe and staying healthy. And we will see you soon or talk to you guys soon on the next episode.
Yeah. Have a great day, guys. Stay sane. Don't do or don't be a Karen. It's up to you.
I'm about to be a Karen. There's people playing at the park by my house and I'm livid. So I'm about to go Karen it up out here, guys. But everybody stay safe and we will catch you next time.
All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
Oops.